It's Jerry Kramer for Hall of Fame Day, and we're happy to welcome Jerry's daughter, Alicia Kramer, onto the show. But first, we talk to Scott McKenna of the Smock Talk and Smack blog. It's all coming up on Railbird Central next. Central at Cheesehead TV. We're talking some Packers football. We're going to be talking about Jerry Kramer in a little bit. But first, to kick off the show today, we're talking our pre-training camp preview with Scott McKenna of the Talk and Smack blog.
Expert interview.
He's Scott McKenna. How you doing this morning, Scott?
I'm fantastic, Brian. How are you doing?
Very good. We're glad you could join us for your monthly engagement on the show. And before we get into our discussion today, Scott, being Jerry Kramer for Hall of Fame Day, what's your opinion on the matter? If you could give us your thoughts on the Pro Football Hall of Fame candidate, I guess.
Would love to see him get inducted. He was obviously the lead pillar, in what it was arguably the most iconic play in the early stages of NFL history, with being the lead blocker on the ice ball and the QB sneak, and he's by all indications from anything you ever read about Jerry Kramer, he was clearly a leader of the team and in the locker room, and very respected by Lombardi. And I hear the argument as to how many people can you keep or can you have in the Hall of Fame from one era and one team. And I know that the 60s Packers are littered with Hall of Fame players, but if you're also going to have that veteran Hall of Fame induction that you've got every year, well, was Kramer the best guard in the game at that time? He might have been, and because of that, I think you've. He deserves strong consideration. I really hope this is the year that he gets inducted.
Very well said, and very nice tribute to Jerry Kramer. We'll be talking more about that with Alicia Kramer in just a little while. But, Scott, today we're going to be talking Packers training camp. We're on the precipice here of training camp starting later this month, and as kind of a theme for today's episode, what we're going to do is go through the biggest question marks heading into Packers training camp. So what we're going to do is basically go position by position and go through the biggest question marks everywhere on the roster, kind of consider it a training camp preview of sorts. So Scott, if you want to kick things off, obviously the starting place usually with the quarterback position, what's your biggest question mark there heading into 2016 training camp?
You know, obviously when you got Aaron Rodgers as your starting quarterback, you feel pretty comfortable. With that said, he's been nicked up over the last couple of years, and he hasn't missed a ton of time. But, I think when you prepare your team for success, and what I think is going to be a crucial year for the Green Bay Packers and really writing the legacy of Aaron Rodgers and his unison with Mike McCarthy and Ted Thompson, I think that this is going to be a defining year in his career. But if he were to, God forbid, get injured for a four-game stretch, are we fit at the quarterback position with Brett Hundley to be able to go 2-2 over a four-game stretch? And I really think we are. But I do think that that's the question that you have to ask yourself is, he's got no real NFL game day experience on Sundays. And if he's going to be plugged into the position with little warning, little to no warning, how is he going to respond? And it's my belief that Hundley has had enough big game experience at the college level, and he's been you know, well groomed for this position. But I do think that that is the overwhelming elephant in the room as far as the question is concerned at the quarterback position.
The direction I took with this when I tried to come up with the biggest question mark is actually I'm focusing on Aaron Rodgers, and the way I went with it is this. I want to make sure that 2015 was an aberration and not a trend, because I do give Aaron Rodgers the benefit of the doubt in 2015 that the receivers weren't getting open. He had worse protection than the previous few years. Eddie Lacy wasn't quite as effective. But that being said, if you take a look at the statistics, I'm not talking about like total passing yards, total touchdown passes or anything like that, because I think, you know, when you're comparing like his injury shortened 2013 season, he's had worse years. What I'm looking at last year, if you look at the statistics that are based upon percentages and average, if you look at Aaron Rodgers' completion percentage, way down. If you look at his passer rating, way down. If you look at his average yards per pass, that's probably the most alarming one of all. It was something like 6.7 yards a pass. I mean, here's a guy who averaged over is like his entire career averages over 8 yards a pass, 9 yards even. In certain seasons, I'm concerned by that. Like I said, I give Aaron Rodgers the benefit of the doubt, but I do think 2015 was one of his worst seasons, probably his worst season since becoming a starter. I just want to, again, I want to see it be an aberration and not a trend, not him starting a backward slide. I hope it's not that way, but that's the direction I'm going with it.
Good. You know, those are all very valid points, and I guess I tend to think that, you know, he was surrounded with you know, a team that was really banged up, and you know, I'm really going to lean on and hope that that was just an aberration. You are right; he also did miss some passes last year that we just aren't accustomed to seeing him miss. But I'm walking into this season with belief and full conviction that Aaron Rodgers is going to return to the excellence in the MVP form that we've been so accustomed to seeing from him throughout his career.
Well, Scott, keep it going here with the running back position. Biggest question mark at the running back position?
I mean, it has to be Eddie Lacy. You know, who is he? You know, is he going to return to form? Because when he is fit and he's committed to being the best of his abilities, this version of the Green Bay Packers offense is as dynamic of any offense I've ever seen in green and gold. And, you know, on the contrary, when Lacy is sluggish, the Packers have dipped closer to mediocrity. And we saw that last year. When Lacy is like, when he is playing at his best level, in my opinion, he brings a level of physicality to the team that, into the huddle that everybody seems to feed off of. And it felt like towards the end of 2014, it wasn't just Lacy, but it was everybody that, you know, was running powerfully and pushing through tackles and picking up extra yards. So in my opinion, it's his fitness level that is going to be the most vital determining factor in what will be the overall success of the 2016 Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, I kind of like Aaron Rodgers. I give Eddie Lacy a little bit of the benefit of the doubt in that I kind of think the coaching staff, to an extent, blew this whole thing with Eddie Lacy out of proportion. In that, if you take a look at Eddie Lacy's stats, he averaged 4.1 yards per carry. That is the exact same as his rookie year, when he also averaged 4.1 yards per carry and had over 1,000 yards rushing. The difference is he got about 100 less carries last year than he did compared to his rookie year. And nobody thought his rookie year was bad by any means. I think to an extent, the coaching staff blew this out of proportion. Could Eddie Lacy have stood to lose a few pounds? Sure. I think he would have been more effective. So I think Eddie Lacy's going to be fine as long as this all didn't go to his head. So my biggest question mark I'm going with is like the number three running back spot, because I think Eddie Lacy's going to be okay. Can John Crockett carve out a role on this offense? Crockett enters his second season in the NFL now and got a cup of tea late last year. But maybe can he start, you know, with James Starks being up in age, can he start to maybe cut into his playing time a little bit? I realize we have some young, unproven guys like Don Jackson and Brandon Burks in for training camp, and maybe they surprise, but John Crockett, obviously, you know, the one higher up on the depth chart is the more experienced one. So I'd like to see what he can do in 2016.
It's a good take, man. It's a good take.
All right, let's just keep right with it with wide receivers. Go ahead, Scott.
You know, you really with each of these positions, as you sort of carve it out, you can kind of make injury the top thing because we were so banked up last year. But for me, the biggest concern and the biggest question mark at wide receiver is Devontae Adams. And, you know, again, who is Devontae Adams? You look at what he showed at the end of the 2014 season. He showed that he had enough upside to potentially become a legitimate factor at the wide receiver position, and then he gets named the MVP of the 2015 season. And he really or at the end of the 2015 training camp, I should say. And you know, he just really showed that he was a complete dud, in my opinion, in 2015. And now you look at this roster and the depth that exists at the wide receiver position, and then you consider how Ted Thompson and Mike McCarthy have generally built the roster and taking, you know, a huge emphasis on the versatility of players and being able to utilize people, you know, in a wide variety of ways. And you look at who Devontae Adams is lining up against, and you see, okay, well, Jeff Janis has been a great special teams player. Aberderis can offer some special teams ability. We know that Montgomery can do the same. And, well, Trevor Davis was a tremendous kick returner at the college level. So I'm going to be curious to see, like, if Devontae Adams can put it all together. You know, when he was lined up next to Cobb and to Nelson, at times he really showed that he could be a legitimate weapon for this offense. But who is Devontae Adams, and is he going to be able to take that next step in his career? Because if not, his roster spot could potentially even be in jeopardy. And I know that's bold to state, but you know, we need a third wide receiver in this offense, and a guy that's going to be a real possession receiver that can help get yards after the catch. And Adams showed flashes of being able to do that. And I'm going to be real curious to see what his training camp is like this year.
I couldn't have said it any better. When I kind of made up my list of the biggest question marks, Devontae Adams was it as well. I mean, this is a position with no shortage of question marks. I think everybody wants to know what Jeff Janis is capable of and wants to see the what the local boy Jared Aberderis can do. And there's question marks about those guys. But Devontae Adams was expected as a second round draft choice to be kind of, you know, play a big role in this offense. And, you know, I think when you look at Adams' rookie season in the NFL, everybody was kind of encouraged, I guess would be the word, by it. It was nothing special, but I mean, it was what you expected for a rookie. It was good, not great. But then the sophomore season, that was the disappointment, especially in light of Jordy Nelson going down. You thought, oh, here you go, Devontae Adams, you got a bigger role, a bigger spotlight, just take advantage. And he didn't do it. I guess I'm you know, I want to see the big playability. I want to see more athleticism out of him. He's not really tall, but I think, you know, at you know, what is he, 6'1"? I don't think he uses the size that he has to his advantage. I don't see him going up for the jump balls like he did at college at Fresno State. I don't see these things from him. That's what I want to see in 2016 from Devontae Adams.
Well played.
All right. We pretty much agree on that one. So we'll go right into tight end. Scott, biggest question mark at the tight end position.
You know, it's interesting because the addition of Jared Cook really filled what was a huge painful need, and that was going to be a weapon over the middle of the field. And, you know, the Packers just missed where we were missing that all season last year. It's interesting because, you know, now that we've filled that position, there's the other side of the tight end position that was just a gaping hole on the roster last year, and that's that the Packers are missing a stalwart of a blocking tight end. And this tight end doesn't need to be an overwhelmingly receiving threat. They need somebody who's going to be in the mold of like a Tom Crabtree or a Jeff Thomason or maybe even an Eddie West from the 80s, right? A capable receiver, but more so, he acts almost as though he's a sixth offensive lineman, a dependable blocker against a pass-rushing defensive end or an offensive or outside linebacker, and then somebody who can also move defenders in the run-blocking game. And a name that that I'm intrigued by, it's like, you know, they brought Mitchell Henry back, and by all you know, accords of, from what we read from the beat writers in training camp last year, was that, you know, prior to Henry's injury, remember he hurt his hand, he was really having a standout camp, and then they let him go, and he came to Denver, and he was on the roster here in Denver for a while, and you know, he kind of heard the same thing, like, boy, on the radio, you hear, oh, this Mitchell Henry, he's showing some things, and he really stands people up in the run game, and you know, from a blocking perspective, and they kind of mentioned his name as a follow-up to Owen Daniels. And then he was released from the Broncos, you know, before the Packer game, and the Packers brought him in. And, you know, so I'm curious to see if he can fill that role, because, you know, we saw Perillo was okay as a blocker, but nothing to really write home about. And wondering who's going to be able to fill that position, because I think that that's going to be a real needed role to really assist the run game to be able to take next steps in 2016.
Yeah, I definitely can agree with that. I'm not sure there is the blocking tight end on the roster unless it's Mitchell Henry. I guess we'll find out. I just don't know enough about him yet, and we'll find out more during training camp in the preseason. So my biggest question is, what happens to Richard Rodgers with the addition of Jared Cook, who I think will be out there? He's the downfield threat. He's going to be the guy who I think is going to play more often on passing downs than Richard Rodgers does. Maybe the Packers use more two tight end sets. But, I mean, what happens to Richard Rodgers after basically two seasons of being the starter, of being the number one tight end? How does he handle being perhaps the number two tight end or what 1B? I don't know how you want to describe it. How is he going to handle that? Is he going to, you know, sulk at being, you know, having to share time? Does maybe this open things up for him? Does he take a step forward because maybe he's in a better position in terms of one that takes advantage of his talents where he doesn't have to be the downfield guy? He is not that. So what happens to Richard Rodgers? That's my big question mark for 2016 at the tight end position.
It's a good point. And, you know, when you see what Richard Rodgers played best and outside of the Hail Mary game against Detroit, where he really had a good game outside of the Hail Mary, as we had discussed last year. But towards the end of 2014, the last month and a half of the season, we saw Richard Rodgers playing just a receiving role where he wasn't really asked to do a lot of blocking. Corliss was handling that role. And he was able to find little zones in the middle of the field, you know, coming out of the slot position. And you know, there were so many other weapons around him that he was just getting single coverage and he was getting no safety attention. And, you know, he made some big plays down the stretch of the season. And you got to wonder if that's going to be the role that they use him in this year again.
All right. We'll move on to the offensive line. Scott, your biggest question mark there.
No, we have so much talent on the offensive line, the front. You know, I think there's eight people that are true locks to make this roster. You know, you got the five starters, of course, and then you got Shredder is a lock. You got the Lane Taylor they just gave all the money to, and then Jason Spriggs being a second round pick, they made a heavy investment in. You got eight players that are going to be locks of the roster, and you got to wonder how many people they're going to keep. And one name that I'm going to be real curious to see about how they utilize is Kyle Murphy. When I watch Murphy play, and I had a number of Stanford games on tape, and he reminds me of a blend of a young T.J. Lang and a young Mark Tauscher. And, you know, I think Lang could have been, had he committed himself to tackle, he could have played right tackle in this league. Instead, he got a shot at guard and he became an all-pro guard, a Pro Bowl guard, right? So what is Murphy going to turn into? Because he looks like a guy who is, who's maybe not fleet of foot to be able to hold the speed edge or the speed rusher along the edge. But Kauscher wasn't necessarily fleet of foot either, but he was just so witty. He was just such a smart blocker. And Murphy seems to kind of have, you know, that that sort of same sort of sense. Obviously, being a Stanford guy, you'd have to imagine that he would be intelligent. But then, additionally, when you watch him play, he's just such a steady run blocker, a drive blocker in the run game, moving people backwards if he's got his arms on a guy. So I'm wondering if that doesn't necessarily translate to him potentially being a guard in the NFL. And additionally, as we've talked about on past conversations here, we've seen that the Packers have some big decisions ahead of them at the guard position, with both Lang and Sitton being free agents at the turn of the year. So wondering how they use Murphy here in training camp and throughout the lengthy preseason with the five games this year. Are they going to use him, you know, strictly as a tackle, or are they going to move him as a swing between tackle and guard?
Yeah, my big question on the offensive line is, how are the backup spots divvied up? Because obviously we know the starting five, assuming they're healthy, they're going to be set in stone. And basically, when I look at the backups at all five positions, we're pretty sure about two things for sure. J.C. Treader is going to be the backup center, definitely, certainly. Jason Spriggs, I think, is going to be the backup left tackle, assuming he's not an absolute bust. But where is everything else? Is Spriggs going to be a backup swing tackle? Can he play both the right and left sides? If he's as good as people think they could be, might he back up every position except center? Could he be the backup left guard and right guard? Or is Lane Taylor going to be the backup guard there, or even Treader perhaps? So how are the backup spots divvied up? Where do you think they'll go in that?
You know, I think that Lane Taylor was brought back for a purpose, and he was handed the money for a reason. I really envision him being the number one backup guard at both left and right side, and I think Spriggs is going to do the same at tackle. And I really believe that Treader has shown himself to where he could be a backup to the backup at all four of those positions, maybe.
Yeah.
And then obviously he'd be the backup center.
Yeah. All right. Let's turn our attention to the defensive side. Scott, your biggest question on the defensive line.
You know, youth needs to serve this roster. The depth is concerning there. And the Packers are going to need either Lowry, Clark, or Ringo to reach their high water mark this year. Additionally, they're going to need Pennell to really take that next step. You know, there's such limited depth with the loss of B.J. Raji, and it's stunning the Packers. And then they move Dayton Jones to the elephant role. So I guess I just look at it and I wonder, of Lowry, of Clark, and of Ringo, which of those three players, and you'd expect it obviously to be Clark since they made the first-round investment in him, but which of those three players is going to really come in and make a dynamic impact in year one? And if that doesn't happen, there's going to be a huge hole in the depth of this defensive line, assuming, you know, you get in the trenches and people get nicked up, and you feel comfortable with Mike Daniels. You feel real good about LaTroy Guyon returning to his 2014 role or position, I should say, and hopefully being able to find the same stride that he had there. And you know, the Packers obviously use a lot of the just two down linemen. But with that said, from a rotational perspective, which of those three youngsters is going to really be able to step in this year and make a huge impact on this team to help propel it to the next level on the defensive line?
Yeah, basically my big question was in the same vein, but I went strictly with Kenny Clark in terms of how big of a role can he play right away. Kenny Clark is going to play, but you know, just because, you know, Mike Pinnell suspended the first few games of the season, Kenny Clark's going to play. But it's a matter of, is he going to be a 10-snap-a-game guy, or is Kenny Clark going to be a 30-snap-a-game guy and play a big role in his rookie season? It's kind of uncertain, you know, as the first round draft choice. We know he's going to be out there on the playing field. It's how ready he is right away. And you know, Scott went through some of the reasons, but kind of in interest of time here, Scott, as we just go through the roster, linebackers, both inside and outside, biggest question mark there?
You know, I'm on record as saying that the 2016 season for the Green Bay Packers is Super Bowl or bust. And I really think that if we're having these conversations, and I truly hope we are 10 years from now, and we're having an off-season discussion as to analyzing, boy, the last 25 to 30 years where we had both Favre and then Rodgers as quarterback, how many Super Bowls did we win? And, you know, 2016, we brought the band back together for one last run here with, you know, Peppers back and the offensive line back. And, you know, I just look at, and then the investment of Jared Cook as well. But I just look at the one gaping hole in this roster is that inside linebacker. And what are they going to do with Clay Matthews? Is he going to play inside linebacker, or are they truly just moving him back to outside linebacker? And if they're moving him strictly to an outside linebacker position, I am absolutely fearful as to what's going to happen to the interior of our defense. And bringing us back to memories of, you know, the early 2014 defense, the late 2013 defense, where we didn't have the physicality, we didn't have the speed at the inside of our defense. I know there's a lot of hope that Blake Martinez is going to be able to offer greatness, and I'm shy on being critical. You know that about me, Brian, but you know, I watched a lot of his football at the college level, and I'd be shocked if he can make a three-down impact, you know, in his rookie season at inside linebacker. So I'm scared as to what we're going to look like at the inside linebacker position if Clay Matthews is not playing early downs at that position. And, you know, with that said, the inside linebacker position, in my opinion, outside of Eddie Lacy's, you know, fitness level and the way he's going to be able to perform this year, I think it's going to be, you talk about determining factors as to what's going to define success for this roster and this team. Inside linebacker, for me, is where it begins and ends at the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, I think most people, if you were to ask them the biggest question mark at the linebacker position, everybody's going to say, you know, what happens at inside linebacker, no matter who, you know, who are the starters going to be, who's going to play there? Is Clay Matthews going to play there? That's the question mark for everyone at that position. And so with that said, Scott, finally, secondary, what's your big question mark there?
Biggest question mark for me is, can HaHa Clinton Dix elevate to an all-pro level? And if you look at the best Packers teams in our lifetime, Brian, 2010 Packers had Nick Collins playing as well as anybody at the safety position. You know, in the mid-90s, we had Leroy Butler playing safety as well as anybody. And I think that just a hallmark of great defenses oftentimes is having a safety that just is an absolute difference maker. And HaHa has all the tools. He has all the traits. He's oftentimes in position to make the play. He just needs to capitalize. When he's plugging the hole, he needs to finish the tackle. When the ball hits his hands, he needs to catch it. And I think if HaHa can take next steps in his career, and we see Peppers be able to find some youth at times this year, and we see Clay Matthews being able to just do as Clay has done throughout his career, we're going to have a couple of great pillars in the defense that are going to really help this team be one of the elite defenses in the NFL. And in order to become that elite defense, I really think HaHa has to continue to grow and to become an all-pro player.
Interesting. I see where you're coming from. My biggest question mark in the secondary is the versatility of Demarius Randall and Quentin Rollins, because basically last year, both these guys played, but we almost saw Demarius Randall strictly on the outside, and we almost saw Quentin Rollins strictly on the inside. I want to know if these guys can be more versatile. Can Demarius Randall play the slot, and can Quentin Rollins play on the perimeter? Something we didn't see from them as rookies, and I'm sure the coaching staff, part of it is not wanting to overwhelm them in the rookie year, but it's not the rookie year anymore, and I want to see if these guys can, you know, like when Demarius Randle, when the Packers go to the dime, can he kick inside and play like he did in college at Arizona State, where he was a safety, and you know, be more, play more inside the box? I want to see that out of him, and I want to see if anybody suffers an injury, you know, be it Demarius Randle or Sam Shields. Not that I'm wishing it upon him, but in a 16 game season, one of them might miss a game. I want to know if Quinton Rollins can kick out and cover a guy on the perimeter.
So those are interesting questions, and certainly things that we need answered. And I'm just hoping that those two can sort of complement each other, right? Like one of them playing on the outside, the other playing on the inside. And then hopefully a guy like Gunter can really take the next step and show that he's worthy of, you know, playing time throughout a 16-game season as potentially a dime back or, you know, at the cornerback position. But certainly something to consider is, how will Rollins and Randle take the leap from year one to year two?
There you go. We went through the whole roster position by position. Scott, thanks so much for talking to me this morning. I got to get Alicia Kramer on the phone. So it was good to talk some Packers football, and talk to you next month.
Go Pack, go, Brian.
Go Pack, go. Scott McKenna joining us on Railbird Central from the Talkin' Smack blog. Give him a follow on Twitter, BuzzBoy3. And we're going to pause here for a second while I get Alicia Kramer on the phone. And we're going to talk about Jerry Kramer for Hall of Fame Day. Stick around. Welcome back. We're back on Railbird Central here at Cheesehead TV on a Friday morning. And joining us now is Jerry Kramer's daughter, Alicia Kramer, here on Jerry Kramer for Hall of Fame Day. Alicia, thanks for joining us. How are you this morning?
I'm pretty good, thank you. I think I'm so shocked about last night's events, the last few days' events, but I'm trying to push forward and do something positive today.
Yeah, I don't know where to talk about the events of the past few days from a national perspective, and maybe yep. We just focus on the good here instead of the bad and talking
right.
about somebody's accomplishments. So with that being
right.
said, what do you think of the combined efforts of the Packers blogosphere, of 10 Packers blogs getting together for a common cause and creating this communal Jerry Kramer for Hall of Fame Day?
You know, I was surprised, but not surprised. And I am so thankful that you guys came together, because this is the boost that we really needed to get the word out to all Cheesehead Nation and to all football fans. And I just am really thankful and excited in a lot of ways, because I think it will work.
The timing to me seems appropriate during a period where NFL news maybe is kind of at a minimum before training camp starts, to give our attention to your father and what would be otherwise a dead period in the news cycle, don't you think?
Oh, I think so. Yep, everybody's preparing for training camp. I am too, but this is a great time and a good time to write a letter. The Senior Selection Committee makes their announcement next month. At the end of the month, and if people are going to make a difference, this is the time to do it.
Sounds good. So as I understand it, this is going to be your last year kind of in an active campaigning role for your father, Jerry Kramer, to go into the Hall of Fame. Alicia, could you kind of tell us the extent of your efforts in the past?
Yeah, for the last several years, me and family and friends and a lot of cheeseheads and football fans have been campaigning on social media. I took a little time off to have a family, but that has always been going. The campaign has always been going. It's brought us a lot of good things. Dad has never felt so much love from football fans as he ever has. And, you know, we've just kind of kept it going, but I really feel like this year a lot more people are coming on board. They're realizing that this has happened. More people are asking questions. And I just feel like this movement this year is a lot bigger than it ever has been in the past. And I think it's a lot because we have been kind of keeping along and keeping people posted and sharing information. But I really feel that this year is a good year. I really wanted this for Dad in a lot of ways for a number of different reasons. But, you know, in a way, he's starting to feel a little bit embarrassed about it. And I don't want that. I wanted it to be a positive thing. I wanted it to be something that he could be proud of, and he is. But he just feels like he's starting to get a little bit embarrassed at this point. And I made a promise to him that this would be the final year of doing it publicly. I will always continue to say something privately or in conversations or even publicly sometimes. But for the most part, this is our last year, and I'll be putting away all the social media stuff if Dad doesn't get elected this year.
Well, I hope it ends up being the fruits of your labor come to fruition, so it doesn't have to be done anymore. But Alicia, if I could have only asked you one question today, I'm really interested in this one because I think you're going to have some strong opinions on it. What was your reaction last year, last season, when you found out that former Raiders quarterback Kenny Stabler was elected by the seniors committee posthumously? I'll stop there. I want to hear what you have to say about that.
Yeah, I understand where you're going with that. As I started doing the Hall of Fame campaign, I noticed that there were a couple players that had gone in after they passed. And Dad is approaching, he is 80. He's not approaching 80, he is 80. And he's still in good health in some ways. In other ways, the age is starting to catch up with him. And after I saw so many people, one of the things that I saw continually on social media is people pushing for Kenny. And I kept thinking, boy, he's going to go in. And then he passed. And that really struck a chord personally with me. Dad has had a wonderful life. But this is the ultimate career achievement to be selected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. So one thing on his football resume that makes it almost incomplete. And I just feel like I need to do this. And it needs to be done before he passes away so he can at least enjoy it. I just have this feeling, and as Dad ages and continues to slow down and not do as many public appearances and stuff, I just feel this urge. I feel compelled more and more to do it. And I just like to see him enjoy it and some of his teammates be there and enjoy it and his fans be there and enjoy it with him while he's alive. I'm getting all choked up just thinking about it. It shouldn't be personal, but it is.
No, I understand where you're coming from, and thank you for being so frank about it. So Alicia, in today's world of short attention spans, can you maybe give me the pitch? Why Jerry Kramer should be inducted into the Hall of Fame, maybe kind of in a nutshell?
Well, he's the only guard that I know in football history that had scored 177 points. And he's the only member of the NFL 50th anniversary team not in the Hall of Fame. And that in itself should resonate with people. He is the only member. Even the two alternates that were placed underneath him in that selection are in the Hall of Fame. And so that should raise some brows and raise some questions to people, but why he is not in there. And I just think dad's position as a guard and as a kicker should really resonate with people. And I just hope people will take a moment and go back and research that history on dad, because the guard position is not a glamorous position. And you will, the only way that I even learned about dad and his career was a lot of studying newspaper clips. And I've shared all that online. All that information is online where people can see it. And more and more information is built every day. And I just hope people will take the time to look at it and ask questions and share it with their friends who love football.
So before we let you go, how can people get involved? What do you suggest they do?
One of the most important things a person can do is write the Pro Football Hall of Fame and address their letters of nomination to the Senior Selection Committee. And then the second important thing is to share that information online with social media and to share it with your football friends, people who are interested in football, the groups. And that's really... just keep sharing that information, because every day I have people approach me and saying that they can't believe it's true. They thought he was already in. And so those are the two most important things that I feel you can do. I don't want people to badger the voters. Their job is hard enough. But make a general letter to the selection committee at the Pro Football Hall of Fame and nominate dad. And it can be a real simple letter. It doesn't have to be a long, passionate letter, but those long, passionate letters really do make a difference.
Alicia, thank you so much for joining us this morning. I think that the point, the fact that you moved to tears shows your passion and your love for your father. I think that was a powerful moment. Thank you for joining the show and sharing that. And we're going to try to get the word out as much as possible.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you, Cheesehead Nation. Thank you, football fans. We appreciate it. It's not just me. It's my family, my whole family and friends. So thank you.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Alicia. Take care. There you go. Alicia Kramer. Wow, that was one of the most powerful moments on the history of this show, Railbird Central, over 600 episodes. We have Jerry Kramer's daughter getting choked up about years of campaigning for her father to go into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, a very deserving honor, and hopefully we're going to get the word out today. Like she said, I think it's easy to tweet something out and tweet the hashtag, and that's great. It would be great if people go that extra step and contact the Pro Football Hall of Fame Seniors Committee members. We've got all the information at Cheesehead TV. And once again, thank you to all the Packers blogs taking part. I think we're making a difference. I saw today, earlier, before I came on air, Charles Davis, Fox analyst, tweeting about Jerry Kramer today. So that's what this has done. 10 Packers blogs that probably each of us is just a drop in the pond, because we're not ESPN, we're not Fox, we're not CBS, but collectively coming together, getting the word out. I think we've done something. We've reached Charles Davis. I'm sure we're reaching other people as well. I think that's a great thing. I think that's a great thing. So with that, normally on this show, we have other segments about Packers news and the day ahead. And I think we're just going to stop it there today. Well, what a better place to stop than stopping on this campaign to get Jerry Kramer in the Hall of Fame. Thank you to Alicia Kramer for joining the show. Thank you to Scott McKenna for joining us as well. There's going to be no episode of Railbird Central on Monday. You got a double dose today, two interviews. I think that's making up for it. And what an interview it was with Alicia Kramer. That was great. So, we'll see you folks. Have a good weekend. Enjoy it and go spread the word. Jerry Kramer for Hall of Fame. Use hashtag Jerry Kramer for the number four, HOF, Jerry Kramer for HOF. Spread it out there and have a good weekend. We'll see you, folks. I leave you today with a song called Women, Wine, and Song by Umphreys McGee on Psy Fidelity Records. Go Pack, go.